Good morning, everybody. Ksivach Sima Tova to all of you. We're counting down towards Rosh Hashanah and beginning to focus much more directly and specifically on what Rosh Hashanah means and the implications of Rosh Hashanah for ourselves, for our families, and for Klal Yisrael. And we certainly hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will respond favorably to all of our tefillos. Perhaps the central tefillah that we recite on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is the tefillah of Unasana Tokef. If you look at the first page, I Xeroxed it for you, and let's remind ourselves what it says and what its significance is. It's a tefillah that more so probably than any other expresses the tension and the nervousness and the concern and the worry and the trepidation and the fear that we feel on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are not just simply holidays where we have family and we have friends and we eat and we drink, but Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur primarily are Yemei Hadin, or days of judgment. And the Gemara has the imagery of the Sifrei Chaim, V'sifrei Mesim Psuchim Lefanav, the imagery of the books that are open, and the imagery of God looking at us and judging us and examining us. And that elicits within us a sense of tension and nervousness and concern and worry. And that emotion is expressed primarily and very graphically in Unasana Tokef. Unasana Tokef Kedushas Hayom Ki Hu No Rava Ayom. We refer to it as the day of Nora and Ayom. It's awesome. It's powerful. It's scary. Uboti nosem al chusecha v'yikon b'chesed kisecha v'seishev olav be'emes. It's a day that Hashem's kingship is raised up and Hashem sits on a throne of truth and in judgment. Emes ki atohu dayon u'mochiach v'yodea v'eid v'chosei v'choseim, that when God is a judge, God does things as a judge, and God remembers, and God knows, and God writes and inscribes. V'sizkor kol nishkachos, he remembers everything that anybody else may want to forget. V'siftach ha-zefer ha-zichronos, he opens up the book of memories. V'chosam yad kol adam bo, and every human being's signature is on their page. We can't just say that it's not us, we didn't do it, it was somebody else. We signed onto that page. Ubashofar godol yitoka v'kol demama dako yishama. The shofar is sounded. Malachim yechafezun v'chilu re'ado yochezun v'yomru hine yom hadin. That even the angels are expressing this kind of a fear and nervousness. Malachim yechafezun chilu re'ado yochezun, trembling and terror seizes hold of them. V'chol bo'ei olam yarvun lefanecha kivnei maron, and all human beings pass before Hashem, Kivnei Maron. Will come back to what Kivnei Maron means. And then we move on to the second paragraph, which is really graphic and really scary and really tense. Kama Ya'avron, Kama Yibareon, how many will be created, how many will pass away, how many will come into the world, Mi Yichye, Mi Yamos, who will die, who will live, mi bekitzo, mi lo bekitzo, mi bamayim, ba'esh. And then comes a long description of the kinds of things that we don't want to think about. And finally, uchuva tfilo tzedaka, ma'avir en esroa ha'gzeira. So this is the central tfila that we recite on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and it elicits within us, and correctly so, tremendous nervousness. If we take it seriously, and we should, and if we think about the books, and we think about Rosh Hashanah as a day of judgment, so then the implications are very real, and the stakes are very high, and we have to engage in some serious introspection. Now, I'm sure all of you know that there is a very famous story that's associated with the writing, the composing of Unasana Tokef. It's a story that's cited in commentaries in most machzorim, and it's a story that first appeared in the Sefer Or Zoruah. The Or Zoruah was written by Rabbi Yitzchak Barab Moshe of Vienna who died roughly around 1250. So we're talking about a sefer that was written somewhere in the first half of the 13th century. That's the first reference that we have for this story. As I said, it became a very, very famous story. It was very popular. It became very well known. It was reproduced many times in many different forms throughout the Middle Ages. It was the subject of an early 20th century historical poem in Russia. It was the subject of a 20th century Yiddish play in America. And it's something that is very, very familiar to us. What I would like to do is read it through very carefully. Rather than you knowing about it from stories that you heard, let's take a look at the original source and see what we could do about this story and how we could better understand it. So if you turn, please, to page 2, I Xeroxed for you the original, Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Moshe Mivina, Sefer Ozarua, and there is a pretty good English translation that surrounds it on the outside of the page. Matzasi miksav yado shel Rabbi Ephraim mibona b'Rabbi Yaakov. So that's very important to understand that Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Moshe is giving us his footnote, is giving us his source. And he tells us, I found in a manuscript of Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn. We know a lot about Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn. Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn lived in the 12th century. And Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn wrote a great deal about the Crusades and about persecutions against the Jews after the Crusades. So Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn is well known to us. He wrote something called the Sefer HaZechira, and he writes about the Crusades, and he writes about events subsequent to the Crusades. He's sort of a chronicler. He is sort of a historian and tells us the story about what happened to the Jews at that time. In all likelihood, he wasn't there himself, but he did his homework, and he bases his material on written texts as well as eyewitnesses, tries to put together the best story that he can, and writes up for posterity the history of the Jews at that time. So we know a great deal about Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn. The Or Zeruah claims that he saw in a manuscript that was written by Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn the following. Sherav Amnon mimagensa yasad unatana tokef al mikre hara she'iralo. That Rav Amnon of Mainz, Magenza is Mainz. Magenza or Mainz is one of the three major cities in the Rhine Valley in the early Middle Ages. The communities of Speyer, Vermeise, and Magenza. Speyer, Worms, and Mainz. They were known by their acronym, Kihilot Shum, Shin Vav Mem. Kihilot Shum, Speyer, Vermeise, Magenza. Speyer, Worms, and Mainz. That were relatively destroyed, or certainly very much adversely affected, by the First Crusade in 1096. So Rav Amnon is living in Mainz, and Rav Amnon in Mainz composed. I'd like you to put a circle around the word yasad, because we're going to come back to this. It's going to be very important. Rav Amnon composed. Yasad means he made it up. He composed Unasana Tokef, Al Mikre Hara She'iralo, in the context of a terrible event that happened to him. Vizel Lashono means, and now we're quoting from Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn. So there are two layers in this text. There's the text that we have, and the text itself indicates that the source for this text comes from another text. A text, a manuscript that he's copying over word for word, Vizel Lashono. Maisa Barab Namno Mimagensa. Stories told about Rav Amnon of Mainz, who was a great person, who was of exalted lineage. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He was good looking. Thank you. And the secular authorities, the archbishop wanted him to convert, and he refused to do so. So you need to understand that in the years when Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn is living, namely Crusades and post-Crusades, by post-Crusades I mean post-First Crusade. We have the Second Crusade and the Third Crusade and the Fourth Crusade. So one of the major features of that time is forced conversion, where the Christians attempt to forcibly convert the Jews, obviously against their will, to Christianity. And this story is rooted in that worldview. The story is rooted in a world of martyrdom. And Ashkenazi Jews, not all of them, but most of them, certainly many of them, probably most of them, actually die al kiddush Hashem rather than converting to Christianity. If the choice is forced conversion or death, so they choose death, and it's that's being highlighted here in this story. So he was being pressured, as it were, to convert to Christianity. We don't have yet forced conversion or death. It's not as if you don't do this, we're going to kill you. They know that he's a very prominent person, and they want to convince him to convert to Christianity. If they were to do so effectively, then many others who would look up to him would follow suit, and it would be a lot easier for them to convert the Jews to their religion. So you recognize the biblical language here, that they would constantly try to talk him into it, and he wouldn't listen to them. And they would pressure him. And there was one day, when they were really pressuring him with tremendous force. What did he say? You know what? Give me 3 days to think about it. Until that time, he had always consistently refused. Whenever they said convert, he said no. They said convert, he said no. But this time, he was feeling a tremendous amount of pressure. Rather than just repeating what he always did, the same mantra, no, 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 this time he said, give me 3 days. And Rabbi Ephraim of Bone says clearly that the purpose was not because he really seriously wanted to think about it. It was only for the sake of pushing them off, because they were bugging him, they were bothering him. So he just, leave me alone, give me 3 days. He just wanted to get rid of them, but not ever to think that Chas v'Shalom he ever imagined that he would consider this. However, as soon as he left, he had just walked out of the place of the secular authority. He really began to realize and take very seriously that he had said something like this, as if there was even a doubt that he would even consider converting to Christianity. As if he would need to think through that maybe he would deny the living God. So he was very upset that he even gave the impression, even though he did it for the sake of getting rid of them, but even for the sake of giving the impression that this is something he would consider, he was very distraught and very, very upset. He came home, stopped eating, stopped drinking. He was so upset and he became very sick. Again, constant biblical textual resonances here. They came to calm him down. No, Rav Amram, don't be so upset. We know why you did it. They were bugging you. You wanted to get them off your back. Chas v'shalom, you never had a hava mina. Please eat. You're getting sick. You're hurting yourself. But he absolutely refused. Ki amar ered el nivi evel she'ola. I will go down to my grave mourning for what it is that I did. Vayefk vayitatzev alibo. Again, constant biblical parallel. And he cried and he was very sad. Vayibi yom ha'shlishi, on the third day, now's the day that the time is up. He said 3 days, and he would let them know after 3 days. Biyotoko ev doeg, and he was hurting and worried. Vayishlach ha'hegmon achrav vayomar lo eilech. The hegmon sends a messenger, new, what's your answer? Come, tell me your answer. And he says, I'm not going. Vayosef od hatzar, shloach sarim rabim v'nechbadim me'ela. Once again, biblical imagery. Vayima'en la'lachat elav, the sar, the hegemon, keeps on sending more and more influential and prominent messengers to bring him back, and he refuses to go. Vayomer ha'hegemon maharu et amnon la'vio bal korcho. So now he's not coming, so now we're going to force him to come. Vayimaharu vayaviu oto vayomer lo mazot amnon. Lama lo bota elai lemoed asher yo'ada toli lihivo eitz ulahashiv li davar v'la'asot et bakashati. So the Hegemon says, where have you been? You told me after 3 days, so the 3 days are up. So why haven't you come to give me your answer? Vaya'an vayomer amnon. Amnon says, ani et mishpati acharotz. I want to pronounce my own judgment. You're right. I violated the law, and I need to be punished, and I'm going to tell you what the punishment should be. Ki halashon asher diber v'techazev l'cha dina l'chatcha. My tongue that spoke wrongly, my tongue that said that I will give 3 days consideration for this suggestion, my tongue should be cut off because my tongue did something terrible. My tongue never should have said that I'm going to give you three, that I'm going to give 3 days of thought to this. Ki chafetz haya Rav Amnon lekadesh et Hashem al asher diber kacha. Rav Amnon did it in order to sanctify the name of God. Vayan ha'egmon vayomer, and the hegmon answered and said, no. Ki ha'lashon lo echtoch, on the contrary, I'm not going to cut out the tongue, because the tongue said the right thing. When you said, I want to think about it for 3 days, that was an appropriate thing, because it did indicate that you were prepared to consider the possibility of converting to Christianity, so that was the right thing. But what should be punished? Haraglayim asher lo ba'u l'moed asher dibarta elai akatzeitz. I'm going to chop your feet off. Your feet are the ones that sinned, because after 3 days, you said you would come and you didn't come. I had to force you to come. So the story continues that he cuts off one foot and he says that you're going to convert, and he cuts off the second foot, and then he cuts off all his fingers. He cuts off his limbs, and at the end, obviously, he can't move, so he puts him on what's called a shield, a magain, and he sends him home. If you skip a few lines later, Achar Hadvarim Ha'ele, it's about one-third from the bottom, the line beginning Mipiv. Achar Hadvarim Ha'ele Karav Moed V'Igia Rosh Hashanah. B'kesh Mikrovav L'Seita Tola Beit HaKnesset Im Kol Pirkei Etzba'otav HaMeluchim. He asks that he be brought to shul on Rosh Hashanah with all of the limbs of his body. Meluchim probably means that were preserved because they were cut off and they would shrivel up. So apparently they were preserved, and he wanted to be brought with all of his limbs next to him. So he comes into shul. Vayas kein, vayhi kasher higia shliach tzibur lomar hakadusha v'chayot asher heina. When they came to that particular part of the davening, amar le Amnon hamtei ma'at, he told the shliach tzibur to wait a minute. Va'akadesh et Hashem agadol, and I want to sanctify Hashem's name. Vayan b'kol ram, and he says in a loud voice, u'bechein locha sale kedusha, I now want to raise for you a level of sanctity. V'achar kach amar unetana tokef kedushat hayo. Now if you have a pen, circle the word amar. Amar means what? It means he said or recited, as opposed to what's the verb that's found in the introduction to this whole story? Yasad. Okay, understand that the original source of Rabbi Ephraim of Bone does not say Yasad, it says Amar. When this is repeated a century later, Rabbi Ephraim of Bone, 12th century, Rabbi Yitzchak of Vienna in the 13th century, he introduces it by saying Yasad, he composed. But the original source from which Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Moshe, the Or Zeruah, takes all of this material, never says Yasad. It says Amar. And he continues, Emes Kiato Dayanu Mochiach, and he continues with phrases that we have in the Tfilah of Unasana Tokef. No sooner does he finish reciting this, then he passes away. He dies right there in Shul on Rosh Hashanah next to the Shaliach Tzibur after he finishes saying Unasana Tokef. The text concludes that 3 days after he dies, Achar Advarim Vaha'emes, I share 5 lines from the bottom. Asher hu ala Rav Amnon v'nitbakesh b'yeshiva shel Maila, after he was requested to return up to Hashem, b'yom ha'shlishi l'taharato, on the third day, nireh b'amarot ha'layla, he appears in a dream, l'rabbana Kalonimus, the son of Rabbana Meshulam, the son of Rabbana Kalonimus, the son of Rabbana Moshe, the son of Rabbana Kalonimus, and teaches him, v'limeid lo et ha'piyut ha'hu unetana tokev kedushat hayom. He teaches this tefillah to Rabbi Kolonimus, and he commands him, Vayetzav alav l'shloach oto b'chol tfutzot hagola. He commands him to publicize this prayer, l'hiot lo eid v'zikaron, and it should be a memory for him, Vayas hagaon kein, and this Kolonimus person does so. End of the story, end of the Or Zeruah on Rosh Hashanah. This is the original source. Remember, there are two layers here in the original source. There's a 12th century layer and a 13th century layer. And from here, it was catapulted into the consciousness of Jewish life. Everybody knows this story, and everybody associates it with Unasana Tokef. Your rabbi potentially has or will mentioned this story in introducing him to Sanat Tokef and Shul. It's a very common and well-known story. What historical pieces of information do we elicit? Number one, that there was a rabbi by the name of Rav Amnon who lived in Mainz. And number two, he composed this prayer and recited it in Shul. And number three, he taught it after his death to a Rabbi Kolonimus, who was the one who ultimately popularized it, B'chol Tfutzas Yisrael, throughout the Jewish people. So we need to know first that the tefillah of Unasana Tokef, Kedusha Sayom, Kihuna, Rova, Ayom, Ubot, Tinosem, Alchusecha, Vikom, Bechesed, Kisecha, Vesesha, Velov, Emes, Emes, Kiata, Hudayan, Mochiach, Viodea, Vaid, etc., 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 has been found in the earliest strata of the Geniza documents. And the earliest strata of the Geniza documents place it probably somewhere around the 5th or 6th or 7th century. So therefore, it has become clear that A. Rav Amnon of Mainz did not, in fact, compose this tefillah. As a matter of fact, point number two, we have no evidence at all that there ever existed a Rav Amnon in Mainz in the 11th century or the 12th century. The name Amnon is not a German name. The name Amnon is an Italian name, as is Kolonimus. Kolonimus is an Italian name. Torah scholarship came to Germany in the 10th century when the Kolonimus family moved from Italy to Germany. Torah scholarship came first to Eretz Yisrael. After the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, it went to Italy. Italy, it really developed. And in the beginning of the 10th century, it went from Italy to Germany and from Germany to France. So Ashkenazic Torah scholarship goes back to Italy and from Italy back to Eretz Yisrael. So there's a very strong Italian connection here. Rav Amnon, the name Amnon is an Italian name. Kolonimus, we know this whole Kolonimus family. Kolonimus ben Moshe, ben Meshulam, ben Kolonimus. It goes all the way back to Italy. So there probably was no Rav Amnon of Mainz. And whoever he wasn't, he didn't compose Unasana Tokev Kedusha Sayom. Unasana Tokev Kedusha Sayom is associated with Yanai. Yanai was a poet from Eretz Yisrael who lived somewhere in the middle of the first millennia, somewhere around the 6th or 7th century. So it's a great story, it's a powerful story, it's an important story, but it probably didn't happen. In fact, in all likelihood, it didn't happen. And maybe there was somebody who recited this tefillah in shul on Rosh Hashanah, but didn't compose the tefillah. The tefillah is found beforehand. And that's why I deliberately pointed out to you that in the source of Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn, it never says that he composed it. It says that he recited it. It's only Rabbi Yitzchak or Zeruah who uses Yasad, and the Yasad became established as fact and was accepted all the way down. By the time we come to Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn in the 12th century, Rabbi Ephraim of Bonn is trying to insist that Jews, when faced with martyrdom, should choose martyrdom. When Jews faced with the choice of conversion or death, should choose death. And so therefore this story becomes a paradigmatic representation of what it is that the Ashkenazi ethos is meant to portray. It's meant to portray somebody who Chas v'Shalom would never, never convert to Christianity. And even the Havamina, even the apparent Havamina, he gives the impression that he has a Havamina, that when he says, wait 3 days, is totally unacceptable. To my mind, it doesn't take away from the power of this tefillah. It enhances the power of this tefillah, because we just moved back the composition of this tefillah by some 500 years. The tefillah is composed somewhere around the 5th, 6th, 7th century, in all likelihood by Yanai, and pretty much so in Eretz Yisrael. What I want to do now is deal with some of the themes in this tefillah and also come back to the historicity of it in one particular context. If you look on page 3, the first theme that I want to deal with is, actually, before we get to page 3, go back to page 1, to the tefillah itself. There's something extremely interesting in this tefillah. And that is that if I asked you, what are the three major themes on Rosh Hashanah? What are the three major foci, and let me sharpen the question, during the Musaf Amidah on Rosh Hashanah. So normally we every day we say 19 brachas in the Shmona Esrei, and on Shabbos and Yom Tov we say 7 brachas in the Shmona Esrei, and on Rosh Hashanah for Musaf we say 9 brachas in the Shmona Esrei. And what the first three and the last three are the same, and the middle three are, you're on a roll, Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. Now take a look at the first few lines of Unasana Tokef. Unasana Tokef, Kedusha Sayom, Kihuno, Rova, Ayom, Ubo, Tinase, Malchusecha. So the first is a reference to Malchios. What does Malchios mean? That we acknowledge that God is the king over the world and over us. We are Mamlich HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We make HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the king. And then continue, the next line. Emes ki ato odayin amochiach, v'chosei v'choseim, v'sizkor kol ha'nishkochos, v'tiftach ha'sefer ha'zichronos. So the next theme is Zichronos. That's the major theme of Rosh Hashanah. U'me'elav yikarei, and what's the next line? U'bashofar gadol yitaka. And that is Shofros. So this tefillah was written to be recited during Musaf on Rosh Hashanah, and incorporates at its very beginning the major themes of Musaf on Rosh Hashanah, namely Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. Just so that you should know that originally it was only recited on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Then when it came to France, when the Minhag began to develop in France in the 13th century, it was recited also on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. And then the Minhag moved to Poland later on in the 14th century, 15th century, 16th century, and the Polish Machzorim incorporated it also into the Yom Kippur davening. We say it three times. We say it both days of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Originally, it was not meant to be recited on Yom Kippur, only on Rosh Hashanah and only on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. So from the first day of Rosh Hashanah became also the second day, and from the second day also became Yom Kippur. But you know that it was meant to be recited on Rosh Hashanah because of the centrality of the themes of Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros that appear at the very beginning of this tefillah, which are not themes associated with Yom Kippur. It was picked up for Yom Kippur because Yom Kippur is really the Yom Adin. Yom Kippur is the day when Hashem inscribes, V'chasom l'chaim tovim kol b'nei b'risecha. And this is such a graphic, gripping description of Yom HaDin, so it was deemed to be appropriate also for Yom Kippur. But originally, it was only meant to be on Rosh Hashanah, and you see thematically, certainly at the beginning, the themes of Rosh Hashanah are very prevalent and very prominent and make it appropriate to be associated with Rosh Hashanah. The second point brings us to page three, and that is the universal element of this tefillah. If you look at Unasana Tokef, there's not a single word about Jews. There's not a single word about the Jewish people. There's nothing about us in Unasana Tokef. On the contrary, if you look at Unasana Tokef, who's being judged? Who is being referred to in Unasana Tokef? V'chosam yad kol adam bo. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu opens up the books, it doesn't say v'chosam kol yad yedei ha-yehudim. It doesn't say that this is what the Jews do and the Jews' signatures. It says v'chosam yad kol adam bo. What does it say towards the end? V'chol ba'ei olam ya'arvan lifanecha kivnei moron. All of humanity. It doesn't say v'chol b'nei Yisrael ya'arvan lifanecha kivnei moron. And we need to remember that on Rosh Hashanah, when we worry about ourselves, individuals, and ourselves, family, and our communities, our shuls, our neighborhoods, our communities, and we certainly worry about Klal Yisrael, that we also have to be focused on the big world out there. We also have to be focused on kol ba'ei olam and kol adam. It's not only for us. Our interest extends also to the world at large. And in fact, we reflect that in the davening. On page 3 in Zichronos, in the second paragraph, v'al ha'medinos bo'ye amer, ezo l'achera ve'ezo l'sholom. Ha'medinos doesn't mean medinak Yisrael. Medinot doesn't mean medinot where Jews live. It means all lands, all countries. Ki zecher kol hayitzur at the end of the third line, lefanecha ba. All creations come before you on this day. beginning of the next paragraph, Ki zecher kol hama'asim lefanecha ba, that we remember everything and we're concerned about everybody. And especially this year, when there's such major focus on what happened in with Katrina and with Rita and what's happening in Iraq. So we have to think about that also on Rosh Hashanah. It's not as if that's off our plate, that Rosh Hashanah is only ourselves and only the Jewish people. Of course it's that, and it's primarily that, but it's not exclusively that. And this universalistic element is reflected dafka in the tefillah that's most intensely associated with Rosh Hashanah. In Unasana Tokef, which we identify as the tefillah that's most representative of Rosh Hashanah as a Yom HaDin, as a Day of Judgment, there's not a single word about Jews. On the contrary, it's everybody. And we need to think not only about ourselves, but about everybody. And I want to reflect this also on page 4 in a very interesting question of Rabbeinu Nissim on the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, on page 4, a Zirax from the Rif. The Rif, Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi, who lived in the 11th century, wrote a code. It's pretty much a code, a work that summarizes the law of the Talmud. The Gemara has all kinds of discussions, and then we want to summarize the conclusions. And the Rif in the 11th century summarized the conclusions of the Gemara. And he became a Talmud Katan. He himself became sort of a mini Talmud, and then there began to be commentaries on him. So what you have here on page 4 in the middle is the Rif, Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi. It looks like the Gemara, but it's not the Gemara, it's Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi. And then around it you have commentaries, and the one that I want to focus on is Rabbeinu Nissim, which is all around the top, the left, and the bottom. Rabbeinu Nissim lived in Spain in the 14th century. So the Mishnah says as follows, quoted by the Rif. The Mishnah says that there are 4 Rosh Hashanahs. We think there's only 1 Rosh Hashanah. We are familiar with the Rosh Hashanah. This coming Monday night, tomorrow night is Rosh Hashanah. So that's the Rosh Hashanah. It is Rosh Hashanah. So that's not so. There are 4 Rosh Hashanahs, the Mishnah says. Ba'arba prakim ha'olam nidon. The world is judged 4 times. Number 1, bepesach halatvua. On Pesach time, the world is judged. The world is judged for wheat. Ba'atzeres al peiros ha'ilon. Shavuos time, the world is judged for fruit. B'Rosh Hashanah, on the first day of Tishrei, kol ba'ei olam ovrin lefanav kivnei maron. You notice that the language that we have in the Unasana Tokef is lifted from the Mishnah, and the Mishnah already, it's not Unasana Tokef, it's the Mishnah already says kol ba'ei olam ovrin lefanav kivnei maron. And skip a line, ubechag nidon en alamayim. And on Sukkot, we're judged for water. So Rabbeinu Nissim, the Ran, asks a very important question. And it's actually a very logical question. It's a question that may have occurred to you over the course of the years. He says, I understand very well why on Pesach there's judgment for wheat. Because Pesach is the time when we begin to think about wheat. It's the time in the annual agricultural cycle when we focus on wheat. So if I'm focusing on wheat, so I want to think about wheat, so I'm going to think about maybe now's the time when I'm judged for wheat. On Shavuos, I understand, says the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, why I'm judged for fruit. Because by Shavuos time, it's the fruit season. It's the beginning of the fruit season, so that's a time when it's appropriate to be judged for fruit. I understand why on Sukkot, I'm judged for water. Because Sukkot starts the rainy season. Sukkot starts the rainy season, I start to think about water, so I'm judged for water. But why is it, asks the Ran, it's a really good question, why is it that on Rosh Hashanah human beings are judged? Why dafka Rosh Hashanah? Why dafka the first day of Tishrei? What is there about the first day of Tishrei that's mechayev, that associates human judgment? All the other judgments are associated with some kind of a compelling agricultural or natural reason. That's the time when that thing happens. So that's the time when I'm judged for it. But why should a human being be judged dafka on Rosh Hashanah? Why is Rosh Hashanah a yachsen? Why is there's a yichus to Rosh Hashanah? Somehow this day a human being should be judged. Why? Why shouldn't a human being be judged on Tu B'Shvat? Why shouldn't a human being be judged on the 19th of Cheshvan? Why is this day any more significant than any other day? That's his question. V'yesh lishol, on the left-hand side, on page 4, about halfway down the run. V'yesh lishol, it's about 4 or 5 lines before the first underline. V'yesh lishol. Lama adam nidon b'Rosh Hashanah yosem b'shar yamim. Why are human beings judged on Rosh Hashanah more than any other day? D'bishlama sh'ar dvarim. I understand the other things on which human beings are judged, namely tvua peros ha'ilon and mayim. I understand the other things, namely wheat, fruit, and water. Kol echad bizmano nidon. Each one is judged at a time that's associated with that particular item. Kedar minam b'gemara. Pesach is wheat time, and Shavuos is fruit time, and Sukkos is water time. Now we come to the underline. Aval Adam, but a human being, lama hu nidam b'Rosh Hashanah yosem b'shar yamim. Why is a human being judged on Rosh Hashanah more than any other day? What is it about Rosh Hashanah that makes judgment appropriate? What is it about the first day of Tishrei that makes it legitimate, that makes it sensible to judge a human being on that day? V'tireitz, and he gives 2 answers, and I want to share with you the first answer. V'tireitz, davar zeh lamadnu. I'll tell you why I think, says Rabbeinu Nissim, 14th century Spain, that human beings are judged on Rosh Hashanah. Because the Psikta says, the Psikta is one of the midrashim that we have, it's a medrash, in the name of Rebbe Eliezer, the Tanya be'esrim v'chamisha be'elul nivra ha'olam, that the world was created on the 25th of the month of Elul. Be'esrim v'chamisha be'elul nivra ha'olam. That means that the first day of creation was on the 25th of Elul. Knew how many days of creation were there? There were 6 days of creation. So if you take off your shoes and socks and you start to count, so 25 is day 1, and 26 is day 2, and 27 is day 3, and 28 is day 4, and 29 is day 5, and Elul has 29 days, so day 6 ends up when? On the first day of Tishrei. Who was created on day 6? Human beings. Adam was created on day 6. Now, what happened to Adam on the day that he was created? So the Medrash continues. So far we've gotten that on Aleph and Tishrei Adam was created. B'chaf hei be'elul nivra ha'olam. My wife and I were married on Chaf hei Elul. So we put down on our wedding invitation, Yom she'nivra bo ha'olam. We thought it was really like a sweet thing to put on the wedding invitation, B'chaf hei be'elul. It's many years ago. Yom she'nivra bo ha'olam. Because of this psikta, the psikta quoted by the Ran and Rosh Hashanah, that b'chaf hei be'elul nivra ha'olam, the world is created on the 25th of Elul. What better thing to put on one's wedding invitation? But if you make the cheshbon, you count 6 days, that means that Adam HaRishon was created be'echad b'tishrei. Now the Medrash continues to tell us that Adam HaRishon was extraordinarily busy on the first day of his life, on the day on which Adam was created. Listen to what happened. Vigarsin on 2nd line towards the beginning, Su Hasam Bipsikta, Nimtza Omer b'Rosh Hashanah Nivra Adam HaRishon. Right, so you make the cheshem, if Chaf Hei Elul Nivra HaOlam, so Adam HaRishon was created on Rosh Hashanah. Now here's what happened. Sha'ar Rishon on the first hour of the day, Ola B'machshava, God thought that he would create Adam. Shnia Nisya Eitzim Malachi Asharis, in the 2nd hour, he checked it out with his heavenly court. He asked the angels, Nu, what do you think? You think I should create a human being? And parenthetically, the Medrash tells us there was this whole debate in the heavenly hosts whether human beings should be created. Some angels said, create human beings. Some angels said, don't create human beings. And obviously the bottom line is God rejected those who did not want human beings to be created, and he went ahead and he created them. Bishlosha kine safaro, in the 3rd hour. This is all the 6th day of creation. In the 3rd hour, he gathered together the dust. B'dalet govlo, b'hei rakmo, b'vav asa ugolam. fourth hour, fifth hour, sixth hour. These are all different ways of saying that Hashem formed the dust and shaped the dust and fashioned the dust, that he created Adam out of dust, and it took 3 hours for him to shape and fashion and form the dust into a human being. The Zion in the seventh hour, Zorach bo neshama, he implanted the neshama, the soul, into this, what had been until now just a blob or a glob of dust. It may have been in the shape of a human being, but it wasn't alive. In the seventh hour, Hashem put the neshama in that made it alive. Bechesen, the eighth hour, chniso legan Eden. On the eighth hour, he's already into Gan Eden. B'tshiis nitztava. In the ninth hour, he commands Adam HaRishon, mikol eitz hagan ochol tochel, but me'eitz hadas tovara, not. In the ninth hour, he gives him the command of what it is that he's allowed to benefit from and enjoy in Gan Eden, and that one tree that he's not allowed to have in Gan Eden. Ba'asir esarach, in the tenth hour, he sinned. No sooner does Hashem say, this you can do and this you can't do, boom, 1 hour later, he already does the wrong thing. And it's all one day. This is all day six. This is all day six of creation. We're now in the tenth hour. He sinned. Ba'achas esrei nidon. In the 11th hour, he was judged. B'shteim esrei yatza bedimus. And in the 12th hour, yatza bedimus means that he emerged favorably. He was exiled from Gan Eden, but he wasn't destroyed. He was allowed to continue to live. So what happened on Echad B'Tishrei? What happened on the sixth day of creation, the day on which Adam HaRishon was created? What happened on that day? According to this Medrash, Adam HaRishon sinned, and Adam HaRishon was forgiven for his sin. Adam HaRishon wasn't destroyed because of his sin. Adam HaRishon was allowed to go on in spite of the fact that he sinned. And therefore, says the Rabbeinu Nissim, next line, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, continue, Ze simon libonecha. This should be a sign for your children. Keshem she'amadeto lifonai bedin biyom ze v'yotzaso bedimus. Just like you, Adam HaRishon, stood before me in judgment on this day and you emerged victorious, kach hasidin bonecha lihios omdim lefonai bedin biyom ze v'yotzim bedimus. So too will your children also stand before me in judgment on this day and emerge victorious. So judging human beings on Rosh Hashanah is a tremendous act of chesed on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's part. Because Hashem wants to judge us. So we accept that Hashem wants to judge us. But Hashem is already setting it up that he's judging us on a day when once upon a time there was a judgment and the judgee, the person who was being judged, emerged favorably. The person who was being judged was not destroyed because of the sin that they committed. So therefore Hashem says that should be a precedent for you too. I need to judge you. I know I'm going to judge you. It's important for you that I should judge you. But I'm going to dafka set it up to judge you on a day when there's already a precedent that the judgment should turn out to be favorable. And therefore, I'm going to judge you dafka on Rosh Hashanah. I'm going to judge you dafka on the first day of Tishrei. Because that's the day when the first human being in the history of the world was judged and emerged favorably. Ze simen lebonecha. That should be also for all future generations, simon libanecha, that whenever a judgment takes place, the judgment should emerge victorious. So that explains, says the Ran, why human beings are judged on Rosh Hashanah. Why do I mention it to you, Dafka, in this context? Because who are banecha of Adam HaRishon? Once again, we're not talking here about Jews. When we say ze simon libanecha, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Adam HaRishon, ze simon libanecha, banecha are not b'nei Yisrael, banecha is, as the Mishnah itself says, in the phrase incorporated into Unasana Tokef, Chol Ba'ei Olam, all human beings. This brings me to my next point, and probably my last point. There's a question raised in rabbinic literature that has captured the imagination of many. How many trees were felled and how many quills were sharpened and how much paper was expended and how much ink was used in order to deal with this question. What does it say at the end of Unasana Tokef, the last line and a half? Uchuva tfilo tztaka ma'avir in esroa hagzera. So how many are mentioned in this text? How many are mentioned? Tshuva, tefillah, tzedakah, three. There are three things that will help remove the roa hagzera. The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah on page 5. Where it's underlined. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Dalet devarim ekaren gzar dino shel adam. There are four things that tear up the gzar din of a human being. Notice again, it doesn't say shel Yisrael, it says shel Adam. Elohein, tzedakah. Tzedakah is charity. Tzedakah is shouting out, which is primal prayer, which is tefillah. Shinui Hashem, v'shinui Maisa. Shinui Hashem means you change your name. You change your name. Let's try to elaborate a little bit. You change your identity. It's not just this magical change your name. My name is Yaakov Yosef, so I'm going to be called Yaakov Yosef Chaim. So now I made my name Yaakov Yosef Chaim. Okay, God doesn't know who I am. I'm somebody else. Nothing can happen to me because now I decided my name is Chaim. Bingo, finished. I'm free. I'm done. Everything is fine. So it can't just mean that. Obviously, it's too artificial. It doesn't make any sense. Change your name. Change your identity. I'm different. And that's associated with Shinui Maisa. Shinui Maisa means I change my actions. So Shinui Maisa, I would associate with tshuva. So what do we have here? We have tzedakah, and we have tzedakah, and we have Shinui Hashem v'Shinui Maisa. And then if you look at the first wide line, after the Gemara brings psukim for all of these, v'yeshomrim af Shinui Makom. I changed my place. Also requires explanation. So I live in Boston, and I moved to Teaneck. That's it. God doesn't know. God remembers. He has my old address in Boston. He doesn't know I moved to Teaneck. So he doesn't know. I'm off the radar screen. Finished. I moved away. So he's looking for me over there to get me. So I moved. So I left no forwarding address. He can't figure out where I went. Shinui Makom, so I'm safe. So obviously that requires explanation. So the question that everybody asks is, how could it be that the Gemara says that there are four or potentially five things, and the Nisana Tokef says there are only three things? What happened to the other two? What happened to Shinui Hashem, and what happened to Shinui Makom? So when you have time, you'll look at the Marsha on page 5. When you have time, you'll look at on page 6. You'll look at the Orach Laner on page 6, but the answer is very simple. The answer is you have to know, to go back to my original introduction, when the tefillah was composed and where the tefillah was composed. The tefillah was composed, as I told you, by Yanai in Eretz Yisrael. And so therefore the whole question is not a question, because something written in Eretz Yisrael is not bound by the Talmud Bavli. The Talmud Bavli, in fact, has four things, maybe five things. But Unasana Tokef was written in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael has a different Talmud. What's the Talmud of Eretz Yisrael called? The Talmud Yerushalmi. And if you look in the middle on the right-hand side on page 6, in fact, the Talmud Yerushalmi says, Maseches Tainis, page 6, in the middle on the right-hand side, Amar Rabbi Elazar, you see where the arrow is? The Talmud Yerushalmi says, Gimel Devar Mevatlan Esagzera Kasha, Ve'elohein, Tfila, Utsdaka, Uchuva. Now, without going into the order question, which is a good question, it's three, and it's exactly the same three that we have in our Unasana Tokef. So the reason why our Unasana Tokef has Tshuva, Tfila, Utsdaka, Mavir, Nesroa, Hagzera, because Unasana Tokef is written in Eretz Yisrael, and in Eretz Yisrael, it's bound by the Talmud Yerushalmi. And guess what? The Talmud Yerushalmi says Beferish, says explicitly three. And right below it, I Xerox for you the Medrash Rabbah and Bereshis, which is also from Eretz Yisrael. Medrash Rabbah and Bereshis is an Eretz Yisrael document. And again, Shlosha Devar Mevatlan Gezeros Ra'os. Ve'elohim tefila utzdaka utshuva. So the whole question isn't a question. The answers that are given are very profound and very interesting and teach us a great deal, but are unnecessary because the whole question is based on making the Unasana Tokef fit with the Talmud Bavli when the Unasana Tokef has no reason to fit with the Talmud Bavli because Unasana Tokef is from Eretz Yisrael. Which leaves me now 5 minutes for another final point. And that is something to really understand. Because what happens when we say this tefillah and it doesn't work? Tshuva tefillot tzedakah, ma'avirin es roa ha'gzeira. So, all of us, in many different ways, and some more or some less, face serious challenges in our lives. And face serious challenges in our lives that are bigger than we are. And in spite of everything that we try to do, we feel that we're overwhelmed by them and we can't control them. So in my particular family, we're dealing with the issue of aging, of parents who are aging. And aging is an inexorable process, and it's complicated, and it's very, very, very difficult. People deal with the issue of illness. And illness is very, very strong. And sometimes it gets worse. And sometimes a loved one dies. And we ask ourselves, well, maybe I didn't do enough tshuva, or maybe I didn't do enough tefillah, or maybe I didn't do enough tzedakah. Now maybe I didn't do what I had to do. I tried, but I really didn't. If I would have done more, maybe the gzar din would have been different. But then we don't believe that because we feel that we did do whatever we could. And why am I beating up on myself for something that's bigger than me? We have this tendency to take personal responsibility for everything that goes on as if we could affect it. And it's not always the case. Because it's bigger than us and it's stronger than us, and in spite of everything that we try to do, it still doesn't matter. So therefore, I just want you to realize what the real interpretation of that line is. And you may have heard this before, but to really internalize it, because it's really important. Because it applies not only to personal lives, it applies to communal lives, to life of the Jewish people, to the world. It doesn't say, Utshuva tefilot tzedaka ma'aviren es ha'gzeira. And it doesn't say, Utshuva tefilot tzedaka ma'aviren es ha'gzeira ha'ra'a. It doesn't say, if I do tshuva and I pray and I give tzedaka, then it will overweigh, it will supersede, it will eliminate the bad gzeira. That's not what it says. So what does it say? Utshuva tefilot tzedaka ma'avirin es roa ha'gezeira. What does roa ha'gezeira mean? Not the evil decree, but the evilness of the decree. Which means to me, and this is something that I think about all the time, and especially these days, it means that it's not going to take away the decree necessarily. The gezeira roa may come in spite of everything that we do. And we don't understand why it comes. We don't understand why Hashem does what Hashem does. And it comes. But what I really firmly believe in is that if we engage in tshuva and in tefillah and tzedakah, and engaging in tshuva and tefillah and tzedakah means having a relationship with God and having a relationship with community, if we place ourselves in the context of living a life that God is a major figure, and if we place ourselves living in a life where community is a major figure, because tshuva and tefillah has to do with God, tzedakah has to do with human beings, and tshuva also has to do with human beings. The Mishnah says that if you did something wrong with another person, you have to do tshuva to that person. So tefillah has to do with God, And tzedakah has to do with human beings. You don't give tzedakah to God. You give tzedakah to somebody else. And tshuva has to do with both. So you have one, and then half. If you live a life in the presence of Hashem, and you live a life as part of a community, then it doesn't make it not happen, but it makes it easier to deal with. It's ma'avir en es roa hagzera. It takes the edge off. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen, but it means that you feel a sense of support. You feel a sense of support by a connection with Hashem, even though you don't understand how Hashem behaves, but you have firm belief that koma da'avid rachmana l'tav avid, that whatever Hashem does is right. So there's this tremendous sense of faith in Hashem, and then there is this tremendous sense of community, that when somebody's in trouble, the community can help them. And that's what I think ultimately this tefillah is meant to teach us, that we try our best and we do our best in many, many different ways, but ultimately it's not in our hands. Ultimately it's in Hashem's hands. But if we understand that it's in Hashem's hands, and if we understand that we're part of a Klal Yisrael, of a tzibur, of a community, then we can draw comfort and consolation from those connections. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us the best year possible, and we should be zocha for Shnas Chaim v'Shalom for us, individuals. We all have individual issues, family issues, Klal Yisrael, and don't forget the whole world. Ksiv v'chsima tova.